Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
Oh, I always say fantastic. What could I say instead?
Fantastic!
I am doing great.
Why are you all of a sudden not wanting to say fantastic anymore?
Because I say it all the time.
You've been saying it for 10 years now. Almost 500 episodes. Why change now?
Because I noticed it now.
It's your trademark.
I've noticed
it. So when I say, how's it going, Derek?
I'm doing great.
You lie. I know you're better than great. You're
fantastic. I'm like a trained seal here.
Dance, puppet. Dance. People expect it now. After 10 years. It'd be like, what if I walked into like the Toronto Outdoor Adventure Show or Quiet Adventure Symposium with a shaved face?
Nobody would recognize you.
Right? See?
Who's that ugly man?
Yeah, who is that ugly man over there?
I'm looking here. There's pictures of you on the shelf. And it's good that you cover your face.
Is there pictures of me without a beard on that shelf?
There's one with you on a boat somewhere, fishing.
Oh, that's Mackenzie's very first fish.
Yeah?
Yeah, out on Lake Batiste.
Look how skinny you are in that picture.
Right? Wow. That's before I found out what donuts are. that day we got pulled over. That I had just gotten my boater's license. Oh. My boater's, you know, you have to have that pleasure boater's card thingy in Ontario. I had gotten it that weekend so that Mackenzie, myself, and my father-in-law, Tracy's dad, could go out fishing for the day.
Yeah.
And he's, I won't need it. I said, I'm going to get it anyway because I'll probably need it at some point. And there was a fishing tournament going on.
Oh, so they're looking for everybody.
Yeah. So the cop, and they saw us, the slowest of the batch.
Get the slow.
Because everybody's got those big bass boats just ripping across. And we're sitting there, but. So they zip on over to us and they ask us for all our stuff. And
soft, you got your card. Easy target.
Right? Showed them my card. All right. Enjoy. But yeah, that was Mackenzie's very first fish.
Cool.
And before I started growing the beard to... Anywho, I've got a few things to talk about tonight, but it's all sort of a theme.
Well, most of our episodes are sort of pseudo-themed.
Yeah, around paddling.
Because it saves us having to do segues. How do we segue from this topic?
Segues, though. Some of my segues are absolutely fantastic.
Some.
I didn't say all. Did your word all came out of my mouth? All right. Well, let's get into this then, Mr. Snarky. I don't know what's going on with Derek the last couple of weeks, but oh my God. Can't work like this, people.
I need to retire.
You need to retire. That means, well, after this, because this is episode 497.
Mm-hmm.
It's only three episodes till episode 500.
Yeah.
So do we quit at 599? Or sorry, 499?
I'm going to go live
next week, episode 500. I'm sorry. Sean and Derek are not here this week.
Yeah. Derek is living in a cabin.
Right? Under a rock somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Not feeling fantastic.
Feeling more than fantastic.
Let's talk about group dynamics.
Okay.
So when you're on a trip, how important would you say group dynamics are?
I think it does make a difference.
And I'm talking trips. Besides just by yourself.
I'm the worst one to
me,
be.
Me, myself, and I did not get along.
Dan, myself.
Yeah. Yeah, when you're on a weekend trip or a multi-week trip, yeah. You know, there is a bit of difference. But especially the multi-week trips, you need to have the group dynamics.
And it's not just the dynamics, but you need to have emotionally mature people who, sure, you might have a blow up here and there, but but you get over it. It's like at the end of the day, around the campfire, you're telling stories, telling jokes, whatever, you move on. It's like, right? So it's all about emotional maturity. And I think that's what a lot of tonight's topical matter is going to come down to, is emotional maturity.
Well, we're out. Do people give enough thought to it when they're planning trips?
I think they do, because of all the different things, trips I've been on, and if I've ever been consulted about, hey, what do you think of this person being added, or if I reach out to the group, say, hey, I'd like to add this person, and usually there's a back and forth about, now, for whatever reason, somebody might have a beef with the person, so they don't get picked, right? So I think that there is a lot of that, that where people are like weighing the pros and cons of certain certain characteristical traits of an individual, and whether they tend to take control or tend to see a bit be a backseat driver, or tend to just keep quiet and keep to themselves. And so, yeah, I think there's a lot of that that goes on.
I can only say there's been, well, I'd say four, but one of them is sort of the same group. Three trips where group dynamic, one, I was asked to be the last person because somebody canceled, and
okay,
I was sort of a last minute, hey, yeah.
Is that Woodland Caribou?
Can do, yeah. And there was that one. And then, there's another group I was with where it was sort of, well, we want to go with this person. Are you interested in joining us? I don't really know that person too well, but yeah, I'll join. Yeah. And then there was the one with man camping.
Oh.
Scott.
Up to
Moosonee.
Yeah, I think you guys had a blast doing that.
Well, I had never, besides seeing him at shows, I really didn't know much about Scott. We were friends. Like, we joked around and that sort of deal. But when it come to canoe trips, I really didn't know much about his experience, and we just agreed to go on this trip. And it wasn't until after it became public that we were doing this trip that people go, wait, have you ever
I don't know if this paddled is gonna work
with Scott before? And they were saying the same thing to Scott about me. Have you ever paddled with Sean before? And we showed up, we did the trip, and we had the conversation, like, you know, we just, so you know, people had said, like, you know, and
then people were like,
and after the first day, when, because his big thing was, because I make all these lists and stuff, what happens if things go south? That was his big concern. What am I going to do? Am I going to panic or whatever? Things went south the very first day, and I was just like, whatever. Out the door, all the plans went, and let's carry on.
Yeah.
We knew our destination. Yes. And he was just like, oh, my God, this is awesome. and then I find out from him, I know where we're starting, and I know when we have to be at the destination. Everything between start and end
is
fair game.
It's just fluid.
And it really worked out well.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I could have done the same thing with somebody else, and it not worked out well, too, right? So, I came across an article by Roger Cox. He talked with Mark Agnew. Mark was one of the team members from West Hansen's crew that crossed the Northwest Passage.
Yes.
Right? So I guess he's written a book and whatnot. So this Roger Cox guy had a chit-chat with him. It says, on a record-breaking kayak journey through the Northwest Passage as part of a four-person team, Mark Agnew discovered that navigating relationships was just as important as navigating around icebergs. In 2023, Scottish adventurer Mark Agnew achieved a remarkable double first when he and three Americans, Wes Hansen, Eileen Vesser, and Jeff Wiesty, completed a grueling 83-day, 2,000-odd-mile kayak from one end of the Northwest Passage to the other. In doing so, they became not only the first people to make the journey by a kayak, but also the first to make it entirely under human power, which was really cool. Calling themselves the Arctic Cowboys, the foursome faced all kinds of challenges during their voyage, from polar bear encounters to being trapped by pack ice. However, Agnew's recently published account of their adventure, There Will Be Headwinds, suggests that perhaps the most important factor in completing the journey across the top of Canada may have been the way in which the group dealt with the tensions that inevitably arose along the way. If you think putting together a trip like this, that it is going to be absolute peaches and cream the entire time.
It's impossible.
You're fooling yourself. Yeah. You better take a serious look at you know, your thoughts. At various points, disagreements broke out, which could potentially have destabilized the entire expedition. Every time, however, the Arctic Cowboys managed to make up and move on, and Agnew's warts and all accounts of these critical moments provide some of the most fascinating moments in an already compelling story. So you're going to, you said you wanted to buy the book.
Mm-hmm.
Read it, let me know.
Yes.
Like he's gonna
I'm
read
trying to
book.
Find a... Hey. I've been trying to find... Like, it's on... It is on Amazon, but it's... Yeah. I'm trying to find it directly from him.
Yeah, I don't know. When he joined the Arctic Cowboys in Northern Canada in June 2023, Agnew was already the odd man out. The only Brit in the team of Americans, and in his 30s, while others were in their 50s and 60s. Perhaps more importantly still, while he was a competent kayaker, he had nothing like the same experience or expertise as the other three. Indeed, before joining the Cowboys, he had been preparing to undertake the same journey as part of a team of British rowers.
Hmm.
When asked how he felt meeting these hardened kayakers for the first time, just a matter of days before they were due to depart, Agnew says, "I think the dynamic settled really easily to begin with. Everyone was having a really good time, but then as soon as we started kayaking, there were a lot of sideways looks, and there was a lot of anxiety on my part." Until you start paddling with somebody, you really don't know.
You can't.
Right.
And so somebody in a social situation, or it can be a completely different, you see a different personality facets than if you're out canoeing, paddling, doing something where it's 24/7, it's a lot of hard work, a lot of serious situations. So you can really see the personality come out in a person.
Mm-hmm. Like when I'm sitting there, people, "Oh, you're a kayaker?" I do some kayaking, not much, but said, you know, like, so when if I go, "Okay, well, let's go on a kayak trip. Where are you going?" "Oh, we're going to cross Lake Ontario." "I don't think so."
Mm-hmm.
"Yeah, enjoy." "I'm not going." Like, I'll do rivers and close to shore stuff. I'm not a big wave, big water
sort of kayaker, right? Way out, and like, Lake Ontario is way too big, way too broad.
Yeah, I don't, well, I'm just exaggerating.
No, I know, but saying, like, I can see people doing that.
Yeah.
And I've heard of people trying that, and I've heard people sailing across it, and it's daunting.
Yeah. So, when you're getting those big waves and stuff like that. Yeah. I would have no problems doing that in a canoe.
Yeah.
But in a kayak, my confidence is not that level.
Yeah.
So you think, okay, well, I'm a good kayaker, and people say, "Oh, he kayaks." But then you start looking into things and you realize,
the level of skill I don't have.
So then when somebody gets out there, like he says, the anxiety level all of a sudden, and then all of a sudden people who thought you had all that are starting to look at you and go, "Wait a minute.
Wait a sec."
I'd kayaked a lot during COVID with a friend who was a guide, so he knew what he was doing. And then with another friend who was planning to come to the Northwest Passage to kayak but didn't come. And I was as fast or faster than both of them. I never actually been exposed to people who were really good at kayaking, though. As soon as we started, I was like, "Oh, good God, I have overestimated my ability here." And like I say, until you start paddling with somebody, you don't know.
And it's good they had the emotional maturity to realize that and say that.
Right.
And say, "Listen, I got to pick up my socks. I need some pointers."
Ego is a...
Is a dangerous thing.
Dangerous thing. Things got better very quickly, partly because Eileen coaching me, partly because of West and Jeff going slower. But at one point, there was talk that we might not be able to do a big open water crossing if we were going so slowly. I just had to be humble, and they were very patient with me. The group paddled in two-man kayaks, mostly with Hansen and Wiestey in one, Agnew and Visser in the other. The strong bond soon developed between those sharing the boat. "For me, Eileen transformed the trip from good to great," says Agnew. "She was a sister, a best friend, a mother. She looked after me and was very patient with me, and we also had some great conversations. She was in turn sharing stuff with me, and I was supporting her where I could, which is a huge part of building camaraderie. It's not just about effort. It's about being vulnerable together. One corollary of those sharing a boat getting closer, however, was that as the expedition wore on, any debates tended to become more polarized, with the occupants of one boat often presenting a united front against the occupants of the other. One particular bone of contention was the amount of time Hansen and Weasty took to get themselves ready to leave in the morning, sometimes as long as 3 hours.
That's a slow morning.
Agnew and Visser may have been the slower pair on the water, but they argued that would matter less if they could start each day a little earlier. I could not handle 3 hours waiting to go. That would drive me batty. But then again, I'm one of those people that like oatmeal coffee gone.
Hmm.
Not, I'm going to make some pancakes and some bacon.
I'm going to wander and see some things.
I'm going to have my morning constipational and going to go over there and wrestle that polar bear for a bit. There were tensions, too, over the best routes to take. For all that Agnew was the weakest paddler of the four, it turned out that he had a lot to offer the group in terms of his navigation skills, to the extent that on one section of the journey when the two boats took different routes, he and Visser ended up far ahead of the others. At the time, they didn't really mention it, and they were like, oh man, good to see you again. But then we had a huge blow up about a month later about how we'd left them behind in ice, and so that's why they were leaving us behind. But I had no idea that's how they'd felt.
Hmm.
Understandably, in the Arctic Cowboys near the end of their challenge with winter and the accompanying sea ice closing in fast, tempers became increasingly frayed. However, at no point were relations between team members allowed to get so bad that they seriously reduced the effectiveness of the group. The secret is just not to take things personally, he says. That can be difficult when you're tired, and it also requires a fundamental trust in the relationship. I know that West likes me, West knows that I like him, and I have a mountain of evidence for that. So in the context of that, this is not personal.
Hmm.
His book is called There Will Be Headwinds, Kayaking the Northwest Passage by Mark Agnew. So, yeah, like I say, if you think that you're going on a trip like this and there's not going to be any issues.
Yeah, there's always issues.
Yeah, there's always going to be issues, right? But that's the whole point of group dynamics.
Yep.
There's going to be some tension at some point. It will come to a boil. And things are going to be said, and you got to hash it out. Because the longer you keep it, the worse it's going to get.
If you don't meet it head on, call it out. Say, listen, let's discuss this.
And I think it helps with group dynamics. If there's problems right at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
you get it cleared right at the beginning. Because then it's all, you start to know where everybody's coming from. Mm-hmm. And like I say, I've been on trips where things were happening. And at one point, we were sitting there discussing it. And then eventually something was said.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, we got to deal with this now. Here's the deal. Here's what you're doing. You're pissing everybody off.
Yeah.
Stop. And it was like, oh, okay. You know, yeah, they took the little, oh, what was me thing to begin with, but then it was all shuffled aside.
Yeah, you're right.
Let's get on with the trip and finish the trip. Enjoy. We're here. We're not going to dwell on this. If you want to dwell on it, that's you. The rest of us, we've said our piece. You know what the deal is. We're moving on. And you have to be able to do that, especially in a group and especially somewhere way up there where you can't just, okay, well, I'm just taking my ball and going home.
Yeah, you have to rely on the others. So this is a team dynamic, but you're also in a very dangerous, precarious situation where you need the emotional security and maturity to keep the group together, cohesiveness. You can have these arguments, but in the end, you still have to rely on each other.
Right?
It's imperative.
Yeah. And, I mean, the dynamics of the group is going to determine whether the tension is survivable or if it's just going to destroy the group.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that, like I say, it's part of the getting to know each other. And especially when you're two to a kayak.
Yeah.
It's not like one could just get out and...
I'm walking.
I'm calling an Uber from here.
Yeah.
Or pressing their button, or even when they get to the first landing town sort of thing, they come into their first town for resupply, yeah. Like, you know what? You guys go on. I'll see you suckers later sort of deal. You hope it doesn't come that far. But, like I say, there's... It comes to a point where you can only bite your tongue for so long. You know, I've been on trips where I'm like, you know what? That's not even going to bother me. I'm just going to let it go. Just forget about it. It means nothing. But had it been more than like a week trip,
yep,
it probably at some point would have boiled over where something would have been had to be said, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, and you can't, like say, ego. On some in situations like this,
ego's dangerous.
You gotta let it go. Mm-hmm. You may not be. If you got four people telling you, this
some
is how we
people
got
out there. I've come across a few people. It's like, woof, I'm never going to want to trip with that guy because the ego's too big. He thinks he's all that and more. And it's like, you know what? If I'm on a trip with this guy, this could cause some problems, some safety issues on the trip. Somebody who says, no, it's my way or the highway, it's like, whoa, no, we're a group. We have to all discuss this and come to a cohesive decision on how this is going to happen or where we're going to go or, you know, the direction the whole group takes.
So how many backcountry trips have you taken where there is a definitive leader? Like something like this, I know Wes organized it all. Yep. And so when you look at everything, Wes is the leader of this expedition. Yeah. How many trips have you actually been on where there's one person that, even if it was, I mean, if somebody said, hey, there's like six of us going, I was going to ask this person, this person, this person, because we all have vacation or whatever. Would you be interested in joining the group?
Yeah, I can think
of a
few.
Do you look at that person as the... The one that starts as the leader, or because I don't think I've ever been on a trip where there's one. Sorry, I lie. There is one, and I was the leader of that group because it was people that had never done tripping before.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a leader. I guess a couple I've taken people like that, but in a large group of peers, like when you and I go out, there was no.
There's
leader.
No, yeah.
When I go out with Mike and Marcus and Scott and all that, there was no leader of the group.
There's always a lead organizer, somebody who sets the plans, books the stuff, and
puts
the idea out there. So there's that aspect. But there's also some of the trips I've been on where one individual clearly has a lot of experience. And so others kind of rely on that individual to make sure that we're doing the right thing at the right time. I don't know that I've ever been on a trip where somebody has taken command.
Yeah.
Like I've been on trips where an individual sort of pseudo barks orders and stuff like that, but it's just personality. It's not so much taking control or taking power. It's more of a, it's sort of a not joking, but joking type thing. And, you know.
Yeah. I think the only time I've ever had to put my foot down and take control of a group is when we were coming out of coming out of Little Crow.
Yeah.
And the tropical storms that hit and the waves and water were just so bad. We had to come down Opiongo.
Yeah.
And I said, we are not getting across this. Mm-hmm. And the people I was with, they were like, we can make. I said, no, you do not know this lake.
Yeah.
We are not getting off this lake.
Mm-hmm.
I am flagging down one of the outfitter water taxis.
Yeah.
And I will pay to have us taken off. And they weren't happy with it.
Yeah.
But I knew the lake and I put my foot down.
Yeah.
And when we got...
Safety call.
Yeah. When they finally came to get us and started hauling... you've seen the two big motors on the back of those water taxis.
Yeah.
They were struggling.
Yeah.
We got back to, and they said, we would not have made it off that lake alive.
Exactly. Opiongos, you know, can be rough.
So I think that's the only time I've really had to, mm-hmm, say, take command. But usually it's a group thing.
Yeah. Group thinks are best. Because if you have everybody on board, it's like, hey, this is happening. This is what's going on. Yeah, listen, we got to... Same thing when I was with Grant and Johnny on the Minas Link. We were coming down Opiongo, and it's like, it was just, it's almost like we all thought the same thing at the same time. It's like, no, we got to get it off this water. Mm-hmm. We need to take a rest break. We're all getting tired. We're going to start making mistakes if we don't take a rest break.
Yeah, that's an experience thing,
yeah,
too.
Yes. But. Yeah. We all knew. There was no questioning it. It was just start aiming for land. So, yeah, it was. I've never had a situation where somebody kind of bullies their way to the lead and saying, this is what we're doing.
Like, yeah. And see, I like my solo trips, mm-hmm, where everybody goes solo.
Yeah, that's
in their canoes.
Yeah.
So if I got five people that want to come, there's five canoes. Yeah. Everybody's in their own, yeah, solo in their own.
Everybody's doing their own trip.
Because
here.
They can do their own little parallel thing. If, yep, you don't want to go on this side of the lake, you want to go on that, yep, set. You know where we're aiming, yep, for, at the other end to the portage. We'll,
you
know, see
our,
you there,
angle.
You know, yep, that sort of deal, or somebody, you know, I just want to lay back and relax. I'm just absolutely exhausted from the heat.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to go fishing. Well, take the canoe,
go fishing.
Go fishing.
Do what you
enjoy
want.
Enjoy what you want to do. And that's the benefit to it, is, yeah, people can go do whatever they, yeah, want, and people can, you know, that sort of deal. So, yeah, there is no real, mm-hmm, leader or anybody having, yeah, to take command. It's all a group effort. And those are the best kind of group dynamics
they
when
are.
It comes to,
yeah,
the tripping and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody just... Why can't we all just get along? And we do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and you know, usually it takes a lot,
mm-hmm,
to get going, but sometimes somebody will just have a bad day and somebody will say something and it's like, okay, you know what? You need just to go for a fish or a swim or go back to bed. That was my parents' thing all the time. You know what? Maybe you need a nap.
You should go back to bed and get up on the other side of the bed.
Right? Yeah. No, maybe I need a nap. My wife never says, maybe you need a nap. Because I'd be gone. Oh, maybe, okay, you're right.
Nap? I'd love to take a nap.
Yeah. How come my boss never says that? When a client pisses me off. You know what? You're getting kind of angry. Maybe you need a nap. Maybe you're right. I'll be in my office.
We need a nap room.
We
in
need
this
a
place.
Nap room. Oh, yeah. Screw this place, man. I'm going for a nap. So, yeah, if you want to find out about group dynamics and all the, some of the other stuff that went on, check out There Will Be Headwinds, Kayaking the Northwest Passage by Mark Agnew.
Yes, I did find it. It's $28-$29 per book with $10 shipping with Amazon. But I found it on Indigo Books, and it's only $22.
Yeah, Kevin Callan, he's getting his book published in Canada now, printed in Canada,
mm-hmm,
and he found like Amazon was charging like $40 or something for his, yeah, book, and he's charging $24.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't usually buy books off of Amazon. I just look at Indigo or Chapters or, and then I go to the store and buy it. That's my big thing, is I just look online for something. Oh, it's at this store? Okay. Which store has it so I can go buy it in person?
Yes. Oh, I know. I prefer,
yeah,
that.
Yeah. And if you are ordering any clothing online, especially stuff that's coming from overseas, like,
oh,
Asia. Yeah, they're hobbits over there.
Their large is different than our large.
Their extra, extra large is not our extra, extra large. I'll put it that way.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, they're hobbits. That's all I'm saying. I ordered, yeah, one thing, and there is no way that was fitting at all. It was a paddling shirt, right?
I ordered a double XL.
Well, I wanted a double XL because it was a paddling. It was like this cotton paddling shirt, yeah, sort of keep the sun off my arms and stuff. But,
yeah,
big, I bought it like an extra size as big.
Nice and
so
loose.
Nice and loose, and the air, yeah, could flow through. How does a double XL not fit? I mean, it doesn't even fit like tight.
Yeah.
I could not get it on. And it was just like, okay. I found somebody that it did fit.
Yeah.
That was like half my size.
Yeah.
Oh, this just fits.
It's a double
XL. I know
XL.
I like donuts, but I don't eat that many donuts, okay? So, keeping sort of on the theme of group dynamics, I should have read this one beforehand. 8 questions to ask potential paddling partners.
Mm-hmm.
So Paddling Magazine had this article a while back about these 8 things potential paddle partners. There are things you can do to help out with good group dynamics, and this is one of them. Asking the right questions before the trip even starts. Which, when it came to me and Scott, the questions were not asked. We just dove head straight in.
Yeah.
Every paddler knows there's nothing like going on a multi-day trip to get to know someone. Tripping together can work out beautifully and cement lifelong friendships, or can lead to dramatic disasters when personalities collide under challenging conditions. We had challenging conditions. The windstorms, low water,
yeah.
You name it, things went. Yeah. Here are some key questions to discuss with your tripping partners before setting out on a canoe trip together. A lot of these I did not even think to ask. Number 1, trip goals. What are your trip goals? Do you want to be on the water before the crack of dawn for a long day of record-setting paddling? Are you looking forward to relaxing mornings in camp followed by a leisurely jaunt to the next bay? Gourmet meals or lightweight freeze-dried fare? Lengthy consensus decision-making or dictatorial efficiency from a single group leader? I don't have to be on the water crack of dawn, but I definitely want to be on the water before. If we got a long paddle day,
yeah.
I want to be on the water before 9 if possible.
It's nicer to get into your destination early mm-hmm. than stick it out late and arrive late at your destination.
Especially if there's so many sites on the lake and you know everybody's heading into the lake.
Yeah.
Getting there early gets you a better chance of getting a good site.
A decent site that you can handpick.
And if you run into some travel problems along the route.
There's time to
you're not camping on the end of a portage because now it's dark.
Yeah.
Right?
But it's nice to get in early, like hey, if we cook it out of here early, if we everybody has a snack and coffee, and then we can hit the water, and you know it's going to be 6 hours, so hey, maybe we'll get in by 2. If we can set up some hammocks and
have
relax
a snooze,
the rest of the day,
relax, go for a swim.
Maybe you know if we get in early enough, I can go fishing or do whatever instead of like no. It's like every day. It's like yeah, everybody's dragging their butts in the morning, so now we're always arriving at like an hour before dusk, and now it's rushed to set up the tents and rushed to boil water to make food and rush for this, rush for that. And it's like by the time you're done, it's like okay, it's dark. I'm wearing a headlamp. I guess it's just a big rush day, and I'm just going to go to bed and get up in the morning and repeat. No, get up early, have a quick snack, have a quick coffee, get on the water, get in early, and hey, I'm going to go check out that bay, do some fishing, or
right.
Hey, I have to fix this, or I got to do some work on the water filter, or I got to repair a tent pole. I have time to do that. I don't have to panic and rush.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I'm more of the just boil water for oatmeal and a coffee, and I'm gone.
I usually eat a breakfast bar and have a coffee if there's time.
It's not like I'm doing it like super fast.
No,
But I'm not like dragging my butt doing it either, right? I find I'm good with the lightweight meal. Like I say, because I don't eat so much out there.
Yeah.
Like one of these like freeze-dried meals, sometimes some of those, even at the end of the day, I'm struggling finishing. And if I were at home, I could eat 4 or 5 of those bags, right? But out there, like some days I'm struggling to get through one.
Yeah.
You know, or just some days you get in and you're just so tired. It's like, you know, I'm just going to have some trail mix or something and some water, set up my tent, have a snooze.
Exactly.
And if I feel like it later, I can always boil water and have something to eat. I think the not necessarily a lengthy consensus decision making, but definitely not a dictatorial.
Yeah, I don't like that.
No. Say, hey guys, we got a quick decision to make here. Okay. This is what we're going to do. You know, once everybody agrees, that's our plan. But I'm not going to sit there for a half an hour at the portage deciding something.
Yeah.
right? It's like, okay, guys, here's the issue.
Here's the deal. We can shortcut across this way. It's an extra portage length, or we can paddle the long way around. Who wants to do what? Hey, who's easily convinced? And most people say, I don't care. And
other people that's a lot of it. It's like, I'm good either way.
Yeah, I don't
care. Many times do you hear that?
I don't care. Right? Doesn't matter.
Yep.
But that was with the kids on the hiking trip weekend there recently. It was I could reach out to the park staff by the Zaleo and say, hey, can we change the booking and stay here and not hike to the next lake?
Right.
And both Becca was like, ooh, I like that idea. Stella was like, I don't care. So it's like, okay, we're moving on.
Yeah.
I wanted a definitive decision here, but we're just going to stick to the normal plan.
We did, with my buddy Kevin there, we did the Johnson backpacking trail out at Acre.
Yeah.
One year. And thunder, lightning storm, the whole bit. Like, it was, there's one point where we're going up this hill and there's just like waterfall coming down.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a rough couple of days. And you're following the shoreline back, and you see a canoe, and we're both sitting there thinking, you know, and I turn to him and go, so which one of us is going to fake an accident so that canoe will come take us back to the truck? These are the things that keep you going, right? Yeah. I could fake an accident right now, wave them down, they'd come over, pick us up, take us back to the truck. We'd be done!
Yeah.
I think that's my last backpack trip. I did. Yeah. That was, yeah. Next question. Experience. How well do you know each other? What skill sets and range of experience exist in the group? Who has first aid training? Does everyone know how to perform basic, assisted, and self-rescues? Is the intended route a good fit for the group? Taking an inexperienced paddler for their first wilderness trip can be a rewarding experience for all involved, but should be done thoughtfully.
It's true. Yep.
There's always will be paddlers of varying speeds, skills, and energy levels. Can you put your egos on hold and support each other? Which we talked about earlier. Egos are bad. That's all I guess. So where have you paddled and that sort of thing, and what kind of... But, I mean, when I did the one with Scott, we kind of knew the types of places we've each been and stuff like that, so that was pretty good. We never did get into the full... We knew each had first aid kits and stuff, knew how to use them and stuff, and could rescue each other if need be, because we did it in two separate boats, right?
Mm-hmm.
But taking the inexperienced paddler for their first trips, that was the one time I had to put my foot down, is because they didn't know. They'd never been to Opiongo. I have been on Opiongo where all of a sudden it picks up and you need to get
off. With big water like that, it changes fast.
Especially Opiongo, just because of the geography around it, right?
Yeah.
Other than that, you got to have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't know... And somebody that's done this many times knows, then you sort of got to bow to their knowledge, right? But you can't come across as like a total dictator and say, nope, this is what we're doing. Don't care what you say.
Not a terror group.
But you got to explain why we need to do that. Trip and route pace. Do you want an easy, accessible front country trip or remote wilderness route? Big crossings or sheltered bays? What is the potential cost of shuttles, float planes, ferries, and camping? Given each paddler's experience and current fitness levels, is your trip route realistic? Is your idea of fun paddling for 15 kilometers or 50 kilometers a day? Oh, 50, easy. Does your route have alternate takeouts in case of injury or inclement weather? Usually when you're planning a route,
mm-hmm.
you're saying like say, going from here to here, or we're doing a circle, something like that. And, you know, we want to make it to this on the first, because this is where, if I'm putting the route together, the group saying, hey, here's what I was thinking, are you guys interested? camp here for the first night, there for the first night. And if somebody else has already done a route like this and go, oh, that site, that lake you're talking about is absolute garbage.
It's not worth the time.
We have the time to make it to the following lake and this site, massive beach site.
Yeah, yeah.
So then, okay, well, then we plan the next one.
Yeah.
And then we go from there sort of. And it all, you know, works itself out on where you're going to go and everybody gets a say in it. Usually big crossings are only when you have to. You know, a lot of us tend to paddle along the shore towards the next portage 100%. Sort of thing. We don't always make a beeline, especially if it's a big waterway.
Sometimes they're necessary, though. Sometimes you have to do the big crossing because the lake is like 50 kilometers that way and 50 kilometers that way. It's like, well, let's cut across the middle. Well, the middle's exposed, but if we do it right and the weather's currently nice.
Give or go. If you're out for a week trip, the chances of you wanting to do, unless you're trying to make massive distance.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not doing 50 kilometers a day. I'm out there to enjoy myself. I'm out there to see stuff, explore along the way, that sort of deal, right?
If I'm doing 50K, it better be on a full running river where I just have to kind of keep the boat going straight.
Right?
Because 50K paddling, that's exhausting.
Awesome. Yeah. Alternate takeouts, we look at where we're going and stuff, but a lot of the places we go, there is no real alternate takeouts.
True. Yeah, you're in a loop, you're in a route. Yeah, it's your
inclement weather, then you know what? You're going to find a spot that you can. When we did the Trent Severn and the Thunder Lightning store started, we just pulled over, and we were in the middle of like cottage country at that point. There was nowhere to pull over because it was all people's cottages.
Yeah.
But we found one spot on an island. We just pulled right off, set the canoe upside down, stood under it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, it was that. The rain was just... We got soaked so fast.
Oh, yeah?
Because the water just, boom, just this wall just hit us. Decision-making and risk tolerance. This is a big one. How is your group going to make decisions both on shore and on the water? We always raft up.
Yep.
If there's decisions to be made. How will you manage risks such as large crossings and surf landings? Do you have compatible levels of risk tolerance? And the experience and judgment to make sound decisions. So I know when we've done big water crossings and the wind and the waves have started Divorce Lake.
yes.
We make it as far as we can and then we find a spot to stop.
Yep.
You know, do it in small sections.
Small tubal chunks.
Yeah. So that way it goes. So it's just, and it's just if it comes down to, okay, we need to do the next. Are you ready to go? Not yet. Okay, fine. We'll just sit here for a bit longer. And then, okay, let's get this over with. So off we go to the next chunk, that sort of deal. Because you can't force people to do, when you start forcing people to do stuff like that.
People stop having fun.
They stop having fun and they're shutting down and that's when things happen.
Yes.
Right.
Poor decisions get made.
Yeah. So everybody's got to have the chance to make their input, but you can't just poo-poo all the input and make your own decision anyway.
Yep.
Right? Because that's not going to end well. Daily routine, navigation, setting up camp, cooking, doing dishes, collecting firewood. How will daily tasks be divided? Will your group have a chore rotation or just go with the flow each day? Take into account people's strengths or preferences, go it solo or divide tasks equally among everyone. Well, usually, unless it's Tracy and I, we just, people do their own thing.
Yeah.
I'm not a big group meal person.
I can take it or leave it. It's depending on the size of the group. If it's a four-person group, it's like maybe somebody makes... Like, I, on the Burt Reynolds ones, like, there was a couple times where I made breakfast for the group. And for the most part, I prefer... It depends on the dynamic. Like, some of the trips with Mike Burns, it was nice just sharing meals and putting something together. Like, he'd bring some fresh... he has a local farmer with eggs, so we do some scrambled egg breakfast or this, that, the other thing. So it was nice to have that community meal type thing. But in larger groups, it's like, those two people are going to work out their meals together and those two people are going to work their meals out together. Yeah, And but then if it's like a very large group, it's like, you know what? I'm just going to bring freeze-dried. I'm not going to bother trying to battle this group dynamic. And
especially when you start getting more people like something that maybe you don't. And then you're stuck eating something you don't like or you're skipping a meal.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, I'm more of a do my own thing sort of thing, unless it's like Tracy and I sort of thing. But yeah, if I'm going with you and Mike and Mark, I'm doing my own thing. Just go do your own thing.
Yeah.
Right. We'll sit around the fire and eat or say, hey, anybody need some boiling water for their freeze dry?
Yeah.
That sort of deal. But yeah. Health concerns. Do any group members have health conditions that the others should know about?
That food would allergies. Be good to know.
Food allergies. Did I say food allergies? Nagging shoulder injuries, critical medications, a tendency to become hangry. Share key information so you can support each other when it counts. Yeah, no one's ever really mentioned food allergies until Mike found out I can't eat corn.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
I can't eat corn. And, you know, but I have said it before. I guess I've just never said it.
Not emphasized it?
I've never really emphasized it. Yeah. I said, I just can't eat. Because a lot of times I'm making my own meals.
A lot of times people say these things because it's a preference. Yeah, I can't eat corn. Oh, you don't like corn, eh? No, I can't eat corn. Yeah.
There's a difference. Secret phobias, pet peeves, and essential needs. Do you suffer from crippling ranidophobia?
I never knew that
fear
word.
Of frogs. Does it drive you crazy when people don't stay out of the kitchen while you're making dinner?
Mm-hmm.
Is it dangerous to talk to you before your morning coffee? Oh.
I know some like
personality
that.
Quirks are best managed with advanced warning. Regular check-ins, feedback, and conflict resolution. Will you have regular check-ins throughout the trip? How will you give each other feedback or resolve potential conflict? Hand-to-hand combat on the beach. Do you relish a no-holds-barred debate, or do you prefer gentle, I feel statements? Just get it out in the open. Say, dude, you're being a putz. Regular opportunities for honest check-ins will go far towards keeping your trip running smoothly. So, yeah, if you notice somebody's shutting down sort of thing, dude, what's the problem?
Yeah.
You know, and then, yeah, let's work this and let's figure it out and deal with it, right? So, it's time to have the talk with some pressing questions about canoe trip compatibility and helping with group dynamics.
Yeah.
So, if you're going with a group, like I say, there's a lot of the people I know that I've never actually paddled with, but I know everybody else has paddled with them and never had issues. And, of course, when you're talking to people, oh, yeah, I just got back from this trip with this person, this person, this person. And they're great to trip with. You ever get a chance to trip with them, go.
Yeah.
So when it comes time to, hey, you want to go on this trip? Such and such is coming. I don't think about asking these questions.
Yeah.
Because everybody else that's tripped with them have all said they're great.
The assumptions are there, yeah.
So the questions are sort of already asked.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's funny because Scott and I, we should have asked each other all these questions and we didn't, but luckily enough, I guess
it worked out.
Everything we had an absolute blast. So ask the questions beforehand, make sure you know who you're going with and all is good. And even ask people, talk to people that have tripped with them before, because if you have a quiet conversation with them, they go, oh, you know what? They're great to paddle with. Just make sure, and that way you know, right?
Yeah.
He takes 3 hours on the Thunderbox every morning, so you're never leaving before 11.
He's absolutely horrified of butterflies.
Right? Yeah, we flipped one time because there was a dragonfly. So, yeah, asking the questions and making sure you know who you're going with will definitely help the group dynamics. Paddling is always better and safer with a companion. Your paddling buddy can be a friend, a fellow water sports enthusiast, or even your significant other. People call tandem boats divorce boats, as sharing a boat with your partner can cause more frustration than satisfaction. While there's some truth to this, there are also many ways that paddling together can be quite beneficial to your relationship. So, 11 reasons paddling as a couple can bring you closer. If you don't go to Divorce Lake, then there's no problem so far. But if we go to Divorce Lake one more time, there will definitely not be a fourth time. One, paddling helps couples find rhythm. Whether you are tandem or in two solo paddling vessels, you and your paddling buddy need to find a rhythm. In a shared vessel, you need to sync your strokes, and in two separate vessels, you need to coordinate your speed and direction so you stay close. This means when you paddle as a couple, you must find a rhythm. Sometimes this rhythm is unspoken, but in other instances, it requires communication and compromise. It's all about understanding how your partner is feeling, as well as respecting comfort levels to find a cohesive rhythm. The rhythm you find on the water can potentially translate into other life scenarios. Where she doesn't beat the crap out of you once you get to shore. Find that paddle in places paddle should not be. Two, paddling together builds epic lasting memories. If you paddle as a couple, you are almost guaranteed to never end up as a boring and stale couple with nothing to talk about.
Oh, absolutely.
This is because paddling creates some epic memories and stories. Stories you can recall when times get rough or when you feel stuck in the mundane. Paddling routes are never short of adventure. So when your partner choose to paddle instead of going to lunch at a restaurant, you are likely to build a more exciting dynamic that is anything but boring. And I mean, Tracy's not been paddling backcountry as long as I have.
No.
But some of the stories we already have, like from being woken up with wolves howling
to making
it to shore and under a tarp just before a massive thunder, lightning, and hailstorm hits, and stepping on a massive snapping turtle, and all these little things and whatnot. And Divorce Lake, we joke about it, but at the time it was like, okay, this is a bit much, and we need to get off the lake. And, you know, as the tandem canoes are catamaran coming our way with the wind, and we're paddling into the wind, and they're all waving, and she's getting pissed off, not realizing I'm waving.
Why are they waving at us?
Yeah, she has words for me when that story comes out. Number three, it's a fun way to problem solve together. When you're floating on vast open water and something goes wrong, and it will eventually, problem solving skills become critical. As you navigate waterways and solve problems in your canoe, kayak, or stand-up paddleboard as a couple, you begin to learn how to work together. In addition to learning how to solve problems as a couple, you are also able to learn how to function as a pair in high stress and difficult situations. And we've done that on a trip where the water was so low, you couldn't even get to the beaver dams.
Oh, yeah.
And when you step in the water to drag the canoe, you're sinking up to your waist.
Mm-hmm.
And like Tracy, I had to use a paddle and dig her out one time.
Oh, yeah?
It was that bad, yeah.
Wow.
So you start to, problem solve, right?
Yeah.
Nature gives perspective. When you venture out with a paddle in hand, you are probably heading to a beautiful location. Paddling is a fully immersive activity that helps you quickly connect with nature. Nature has a calming effect on many people, and it also helps you give you a new perspective. Witnessing wildlife while paddling, like the majesty of seabirds, sea turtles, and fish, or simply admiring a pristine coastline, helps you shake off animosity and can help couples let go of petty disputes. So if you guys are arguing in the boat, and all of a sudden you come around the corner and there's a moose, how long does that argument continue?
Oh, it doesn't.
It stops right then and there.
Yeah.
Wilderness helps. Nature helps. Active people tend to be happier.
True.
When you exercise, you release endorphins, which can translate to better moods. Good moods are always a plus when you want your relationship to last. Paddling is like a full-body gym workout, which means you are bound to release ample endorphins. Staying active outdoors has all sorts of benefits. These are amplified times two when you paddle as a couple.
There you go.
They're just throwing some science in there now.
Endorphin.
Endorphins. Shared interests are a plus. So before I even read this, just by that, our son played hockey, rep hockey.
Yeah.
Everything was about the hockey. Like the practice, so many practices a week and the weekends and the travel and the games to different spots and tournaments down in the estates and across Ontario and stuff like that. Everything revolved around hockey. And it was a shared interest.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a blast. Once the hockey ended, we still had our outdoor stuff and camping and traveling, all that sort of stuff. And that was still a shared interests. The amount of people that we know that got divorced once hockey finished.
Oh, really?
The only reason they were still together was because of the hockey.
Yeah.
Their kid was in hockey, and the hockey was their meeting place of all the other parents.
Yeah.
But when they got out of hockey, they realized they had nothing else in common.
Nothing in common.
It was like phenomenal that the within 2 years, such and such broke up. Hey, have you heard from? Oh yeah, they got divorced. Hmm. Oh yeah, she left. Oh he left. It's like really like. All these people that you thought wouldn't even think.
Yeah.
Once hockey ended, there was no interest together.
That commonality disappeared.
So shared interests are definitely a plus. There may be some truth to the saying, opposites attract, but even if you and your partner are nothing alike, it's always good to have a few common interests. Paddling gives couples a common bond. And it does. Tandem paddling is a great way to share the burden. Depends what the weather's like. When times get tough, couples must share the burden. This can be a financial, emotional, or physical burden. Tandem paddling with your partner provides you with valuable practice on load sharing. And you know what? Tracy's really, since she started coming on these trips with me, I don't have to take all the gear myself. I don't have to set up camp myself.
Exactly.
Yep. She's now started, we get to camp. And like you were saying there a few weeks back with your trip, all the kids are now picking little things that they automatically do.
Exactly.
And there's things I automatically, and it used to be I did everything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just, sit down, I'll get this. And then she started picking up stuff. And now there's certain tasks that she does and I do when we get to a new camp spot.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or I'm getting the canoe off the roof. She's starting to take the life jacket, the paddles, and the stuff to the shoreline.
Not just staying there watching, waiting for you to finish.
Yeah, yeah. Or being directed to do that, right? Sometimes you'll need to rest or want to take great photos in your paddling vessel. Other times your partner may need to take a break. This gives give and take makes your paddling adventure smoother, gives you good practice for other aspects of your relationship. So that's it. We'll be paddling somewhere, and she goes, can we stop for a second so I can get a picture? Because she sees something, ahead of her or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or I'll say, hey, hang on a second. I just need to grab some water, or I'm just going to throw some granola or something here or whatever. You have to do that. Number 8, paddling helps keep spontaneity and adventure alive. Some couples grow distant and part ways because life becoming boring, mundane, and repetitive. If you make paddling a consistent habit, then you always have new adventures and experiences. Even when you paddle at the same time on the same day of the week, you are never going to have the same experience twice. This is one of the many joys of paddling. And even though we go to Temagami every year, we're hitting different spots. We're doing different things, seeing different things.
Noticing how it's changed from the last time.
Right.
And, there must have been a forest fire here. Or, you're noticing differences from the last time you were there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all different things, and it really helps out. Longer routes often inspired meaningful conversations.
True. Very true.
Communication is essential if you want any relationship to survive, and is also important while paddling. Sometimes it's hard to find the right time or even time when the two of you are alone and attentive. Tracy's better at that than me.
Oh, yeah?
We'll be sitting there around the campfire, and I'll just be like, tree, pine cone, look at the squirrel, birds on the water. And then she'll come out with something, so I was thinking, oh, crap. And then we get in these discussions about stuff, and, you know, just life things that we really never really stopped to talk about at home. You know, about the kids or, you know, I was thinking about doing the bathroom. I wasn't. You know, that sort of stuff. So these paddling conversations can start casual but can sometimes get deep. Sharing these intimate thoughts while paddling is bound to bring you two closer as a couple. And I agree with that because there are some conversations that, like you say, start out with something small about the kids or something, and then grows into something bigger. And, you know, how, you know, she's missing not having the kids home anymore because we're empty nesters and and we'd love to take somebody on a trip and do this and do that. And it just totally breaks into this total different conversation that we, with the hustle and bustle of daily life, would probably not have happened.
Yeah.
So definitely these getting out on the water, even for a day or something, you can sit there, park the boat somewhere on the side of the river, grab your jet boil and make a coffee or something or a hot drink and just start chatting about different things, and you never know.
Well, it gives you a chance to have a different conversation than what you might have at home or you know, get somebody, like, you know, get their nose out of a book or whatever, then it's like, hey, let's have a conversation with this, or random stuff comes up.
Yeah. Oh, wait, do I hear the ice cream truck calling? See ya. And then an ice cream boat goes by.
Yes. That'd be hilarious.
Paddling helps you get on the same page for vacation. Whether you plan a vacation as a couple, the idea of perfect vacation destination can vary significantly from person to person. The types of activities you plan to do on vacation can also be quite different between you and your partner. If you love paddling and paddling together, you can fly to an epic paddling destination. That's one thing I'd love to do with Tracy.
Yeah.
Take her one of these fly-in places.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
but the
yeah.
price of flying in there is ridiculous.
It's spits deep.
Yeah. Mind you, when we go to Japan, we're hitting a few paddling spots.
Oh, yeah? Yep. Excellent.
Paddling through frustration is great practice for real life. No matter how well you plan for a paddling trip, sometimes things go wrong and your adventure can grow frustrating. This is a good preparation for life together with your partner. If you can weather a storm in a kayak, then you can weather the other storms of life. If you struggle to work through your frustrations with your partner while paddling, then you know what you need to work on.
Absolutely. 100%.
Yep. Paddling as a couple can certainly have its challenges, but it can also be quite beneficial to your relationship. Paddling with your partner allows you to practice problem-solving skills and help you find your rhythm. Exercise can put you both in a better mood. Exercise never puts me in a bigger mood. a better mood.
When the exercise stops, it's like, oh, isn't that great?
Right now I'm in a better mood, yeah. Being in nature can give you both a fresh, optimistic perspective, all while building incredible memories you can keep for your lifetime. And that's the one thing I will say about our trips is there's a lot of memories we have from our paddling trips.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, even we joke because one of the girls from Tracy's work, when Tracy's, I'm taking vacation, we're going up to Temagami. So this one lady who speaks slow and is like, so Tracy, are you going on another one of your poop in the woods trips? So we'll be sitting there talking about the trip we're going on. And Tracy's going, yeah, another one of my poop in the woods trips. So the fact that we can joke about stuff and whatnot, and it puts you in a good mood doing that. So yeah. All about group dynamics.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. And it's every group dynamic takes a different turn, for the worse or for better. It's just to kind of wrap it up, it's like, it's all about that emotional maturity, right? To admit and realize that, you know what, this is something, you know, there might have been this incident where people use harsh words, but later in the day around the campfire, let's just chat and enjoy ourselves and not dwell or hold a grudge or whatever. And like, I don't know, it's nice nice to put stuff like that behind you. And mm-hmm. I've been pretty good about that. It's like, you know, it's
I don't think we've ever, I've ever been on a trip where things have been said and then it just dragged on. The other person was pissed off the entire rest of the trip.
Mm-hmm.
It was said, here's the deal. They had their say, I had my say, and we're good.
Hmm.
Or somebody else had a say, and they're good.
Mentally healthy.
Right? It's got to be. You got to be able to deal with conflict in a healthy way. And it's better than holding it in, because then all the crap storm's going to hit.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, all righty. You got anything else?
No, I do not.
That was a good one.
It was.
Yeah. If you want to find more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream all our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com to stream or download all our episodes. This one being 497.
Ooh.
Getting close to 500.
We are getting darn close.
If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.